This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined, as always, by Bradley Chambers.
How's it going tonight?
It's going pretty well. I've had a pretty busy day, but it's starting to wind down the week. Nice to know.
Yeah, it's turning spring here slowly but surely. Mm. It's 70 degrees today, and the problem is like it's at your house. It's a trivial to turn it from like heat to cool. But in big industrial HVAC environments, it's not that easy. And like when you make the decision to go cool, like you have gone cool. And so people are like, oh, it's hot. Like, yeah, but we're going to have another cold streak. We'll probably have one more cold streak in us. So, so next to last episode of Out of School, mm-hmm. episode 239. And I feel like this show is the pinnacle of the beginning, I feel like this topic is the natural end. And so I'll let you tell us why.
Well, I suppose the news, and this is not necessarily why we're ending the show, but it's a factor in thinking about what happens next for me personally, is that I got a promotion. So I haven't really talked about it much online, but back in December, I was interviewed and appointed as the next head teacher of Cedar School.
Yeah, and so if you're in the U.S., head teacher would be more in line with like head of school or headmaster or principal. So you're basically running the school at this point.
Yes. So I've been the head of the secondary department, the senior school, for a couple of years. But this is, I had a boss before that, and now I will take that position, and I'll be the boss of everybody, I suppose.
And then you have about seven bosses, I guess, now from
the school. Yes, I had my first school board meeting today. That was my first one, and that went very well, actually. And I'm looking forward to it.
Did you ever, like, when you got started in this, because you didn't come at this as like a teacher and first.
No.
And so you generally, when you're a teacher, that's kind of your, a lot, well, not everybody, but a lot of teachers have that desire to move into administration. Yeah. Did you ever have that desire to be promoted to head teacher?
No, not at all. I mean, I wasn't even that sure that I was going to be a good teacher, to be honest with you. I was quite skeptical about my ability because, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, being the kind of person that people sort of think of me as now, as like a teacher and a public speaker and all those kind of things, I had no notion that I would ever have had the ability to do any of that stuff, because I was quite a kind of your typical kind of shy, not very outgoing computer geek. And, you know, I studied computer science for a reason, which was that I didn't have to talk to people. And now all I do every day is talk to people for money. And it is deeply weird to me that I've managed to get even moderately good at that. So it's definitely a surprise. And certainly school management, you know, I just thought that was like big and scary. And I suppose, you know, there's a difference between being what, like 26 or 27 and being 39. You look very differently on the world, and you realize that, well, I don't want to say nobody else knows what they're doing either, because clearly people do know what they're doing, but you sort of realize that you also know what you're doing as well, and you eventually have figured it out at some level. Many caveats to that statement.
Yeah, and it's that role is very difficult, because, like, obviously you go to school, and there are, like, you know, master's degrees in education administration, and people mm-hmm. go to school for that. But so much of that job is judgment calls and dealing with people. And that's why I always tell people some of the most valuable training I ever got was nothing I learned in college or high school. But when I worked at EB Games, it's GameStop now, but when I worked there in college, because I learned about how to deal with people. And that just goes with you in almost every job, and understanding why people have certain motivations and trying to look past a lot of that.
Yeah, this is something I'm starting to realize. Maybe you might say it's a bit late to realize that right now, but I've, you know, in the role as head of secondary school, I've certainly dealt with plenty of people, but I think that the thing that always gets me is that what people say and what they actually mean or feel are not always the same thing. And a lot of people who have a different personality to me are going, well, duh, that's what people are, you know. But for me, I'm kind of like, well, you said that was okay, so I did it, and now you're mad at me. How does that happen, you know? So that is clearly, you know, one of the biggest areas of growth that I'm going to have to work on over the next few years is getting that judgment right. You know, I think I'm very much a kind of, I don't want to say I'm a policy-driven kind of person, but I'm a kind of system-driven person. You know, I think, well, here are the rules, here is the structure. Everybody just fit into that structure and that'll be fine. But of course, people don't fit into that structure. But, you know, it's something that's getting, I personally find it quite hard to deal with when things don't fit into the system that I've designed. So I guess that's a computer scientist way of thinking about the world.
Yeah, I mean, there's not often, it's one of the reasons I really try to tackle not menial tasks, but simpler tasks at home, either the night before or before I come in, because it's like the way of thinking is I don't really bother me until I can get my, you know, today list tackled. I need to get that. This stuff I have to get done, even though the things people may come to see you about may be just as important, if not more important. And so you're like, hey, you know, you have to learn that balance of, hey, let me just shift this, what I was going to do, this website page overhaul, let me just shift that tomorrow because what this person needs is more important. And having that empathy to do that.
You're right. I mean, stuff comes up all the time, you know, and it's something that I think is going to be a big challenge for me, partly because, like, where my office is in the school, like, my office is also the staff room because we're kind of quite short of space in the schools. And I think that it's one of these things where, like, some people view that room as a kind of social place to be. And I think that the current head teacher likes it that way. She's quite a sociable person. And, you know, I'm kind of sitting in there going, well, I'm trying to do a project here about data protection or something. Please, could everybody stop coming in and talking to me all the time? But realizing that actually that is, in fact, part of the job. You know, you've got staff to deal with, you've got to sort of take care of them and make sure you have time for them as well and all that kind of stuff. These are all things that I'm starting to, I mean, theoretically, I knew that was a thing, but I'm starting to realize the actual importance of it and the fact that there's not going to be somebody else to pick up that stuff if I don't think about it.
Well, and that really goes back to me, a principle of getting things done. It's like renegotiating with yourself of if you're going to do that today or not. And if you say you got a data protection project you're working on, but then you just realize like today's not either mental reasons or you've got staffing needs to deal with, like you've just got to renegotiate with yourself. Like, look, let's just say I'll do that tomorrow and spend your time. I mean, they call it managing by walking around. There's aspects of that is needed and important and just being there for people and talking to them and that that's very, very important. And again, like you said, if you're not going to do it, no one's going to do it because you are the buck stops with you now.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you talk about managing yourself and task management and things like that. GTD, getting things done, is very much a kind of system that lets people turn the messy world into a nice systematic thing that you just crank through. And that is actually the sort of founding principle of GTD, is that you turn uncertainty into certainty. But I think you can kind of go too far with that. And I think in some ways, not actually building in time and every day to just let stuff happen or just be available to people, I think is something that I'm quite guilty of from time to time. Like I set my day and I've got my classes and then I've got my free time. And I know that in that 2-hour block, I've got one meeting with a parent and I've got an hour to work on something else. And then I've got another class and then I'm lunch duty. And then the afternoon is all about, I don't know, clearing my email or writing a letter or whatever it is. And, you know, I can easily fill every single day with work from I get into school at like 7:30 in the morning, I leave about 4. I could fill every single minute of that with something that I care about. But realizing that there are things that other people care about as well is going to be something that I have to probably actually have to build into my system, you know, rather than just kind of get frustrated by it all the time. So,
yeah, I don't think there would be anything. If I was in your situation, I might even, again, build in, like, you know, a project, a staff development project or staff relationships, you know, and you could even have grades in there. So, like, you know, today, let's make sure we speak with this grade. And just, again, that can be just stopping in the classroom after school and saying, hey, how's everything going? Anything neat happened today? Anything you need help with? I mean, that can be. Again, that can be where you can kind of channel that staff development stuff into your GTD system, A, so it reminds you to do it, and then B, and so you feel like you're not wasting time, so you feel like you're kind of accomplishing something, because that is a huge part of your job now.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want your day to be interrupt-driven constantly, but part of the reason for that in our school is because we are on 3 floors, that the people who are on the same floor as my office get much more attention than the people who are on the top floor, because we don't coincidentally bump into each other all the time. So that's something that you have to keep a balance of. I'm also quite interested in, you know, the management practice of having like one-to-one meetings with your direct reports. You know, I think that's something I'm interested in. I don't know if I can actually fit it into the week to meet with every single staff member. It might have to be a kind of 2-week rolling program or something like that. But I think that would, for our school, that would be a great development step, would be to have a more kind of systematic way to hear the views of everybody who's working in the school, rather than just, I don't want to say the sort of latest and loudest people, but I don't mean it in a negative way, but just the people who you kind of maybe get on with best or you bump into more often, they can kind of quite easily get their point across in a casual way, whereas people who are maybe at a far remove in the building or their personality doesn't lend itself to coming up to you and asking for something is something that I think you've got to keep in mind.
What are the challenges do you think are ahead of you outside of staffing?
Well, I suppose there's all kinds of things, but I think I've been thinking about this over the past kind of week till we've been running up to this show, and I think the biggest one for me is like how do I express this correctly? When you get power, you have to know what you want to do with it. Does that make sense? Like, mm-hmm. Sometimes people are given power and they don't know what to do with it, and I kind of feel like I'm in that situation right now where I'm sitting at my desk and I'm going, I actually technically have the power to do anything I want to do here. You know, there are constraints on that in terms of money, time, people, space. There are plenty of constraints on that. But in principle, like, I don't have to ask anybody if I want to do something. So even today, I was like, I'm just going to call a staff meeting for a couple of weeks' time. And I just sent an email out and I'm going to do that. There's going to be a meeting and people are going to have to do that, you know. And to me, that's still quite a kind of, you know, previously I would come up with ideas to do stuff, but I would always have somebody to check it with to say, should we do this? Are you happy for me to do this? And I'd get a yes or no on that. Whereas now it's like, well, I can just do that and I don't have to ask anybody. And it's almost not that I'm kind of drunk with power. I'm certainly not drunk with power, but I'm almost like, I need to come up with some ideas here. You know, I need to be the guy who sort of drives the ship here. And I have to say, well, I look into the future and I see this opportunity or this threat, and that's the one I want to take action on. And this is how I'm going to take that action and all of that kind of stuff. I have to make that up there. And that, to me, that's one of the biggest challenges, is just realizing not just that you have to drive it, but also that you have to look far enough ahead, you know. So my head is now involved in September, October, November, and actually I'm having conversations about August 2019 now. I'm not thinking about next week anymore and what my classes are this afternoon. That's, you know, that's got to be on autopilot compared to the kind of larger scale, longer term things that I've got to think about now.
Will you still teach it all?
Yeah, I'm still teaching about half the time. I'm teaching, at the moment I'm teaching 10, 11, 12 periods in the week, which is a little bit more than I would like to do. I think I don't want to do none. That's, you know, some head teachers never teach a class, and you know, depending on your school, that might be the right thing to do. But I would like to still be teaching classes. But I've already dropped quite a few of those hours and handed them over to other colleagues, and I think I'll still do that, but I'm very much focused on like a core computer science curriculum rather than trying to, you know, help out here and help out there. I'm trying to, because that's kind of been my natural way in a lot of the time I've been working at school, is, you know, I'll be a utility player and I'll do a bit of anything that MD needs, and I've got to kind of pull back from that a little bit and say, no, if we need cover here, somebody else has got to do that. So and I can actually write a day's worth of class cover where I don't actually do any of it, you know. And that's something that I've always found quite hard, is like, here I'm imposing on everybody else in the school, but I'm not actually taking any of that weight myself. And I mean, I'll still do that from time to time, but I've got to realize that, you know, I've got to be working at a higher level and just keeping class cover going.
Well, and I think going back to what you said about being able to call a meeting and people have to come, and it's a different sort of management, because before you really only had, let's say you had a project, you really only had to get buy-in in some ways from the person above you. But now you almost have to get buy-in. Obviously people have to do it if you're but like, you want to get that buy-in from everybody to be excited about it. And so it's kind of a different mindset. Now they have to do it, but you also want them to want to do it. as well. Absolutely. And yeah, it's different. Like, you know, you've got to be thinking out about, and that was some of the questions I was going to ask you at the end, about, you know, what's ahead? What does the next 10 years of Cedars look like? Like, that's your thing to think about. And before, it wasn't. But really, you know, you're there. That's part of your role. So let's talk about the future a little bit. Like, what do you think is the future of, like, you know, being a leader of a school?
Well, I think, you know, when you think about the future at all, you have to recognize that, you know, this acronym VUCA, V-U-C-A, which stands for volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. And this is a kind of metaphor or a framework for thinking about the current world that we live in and the future as well. And that's used by military planners and economists and things like that. And I think a certain amount of that applies to school. I wouldn't say that the school situation is not that uncertain. I would say that, I mean, honestly, if you were to go back 100 years and go to a school, you would pretty much be able to operate in the same world as you operate in today. But certainly, education is getting a bit more volatile. I mean, I'll just give you an example. In Scotland, the education secretary and the government sort of announced quite promptly, he said, by 8 months' time, the exam system will no longer have unit assessment. It will actually just have final assessment. And that led to a redesign of, in the space of like 6 months, a redesign of all the courses and a new set of assessment standards. And that was in place within 18 months of him saying that. And that was a very short turnaround for something quite so serious as that. And, you know, there are some areas where you could argue it's not quite as thought through as it could have been. But what can you do in the time that the powers that be say that that's got to turn around? So volatility is something that is creeping into education in a way that it hasn't before. Complexity is certainly getting there. I think when you look at the range of there's an increased request or an increased demand for more flexible pathways through education, and that's something that particularly in upper secondary school we're dealing with, and it's complex to find how can we support, you know, 5 or 6 different pathways through senior school instead of just one traditional pathway that people either succeed or don't. So complexity is coming in there, and of course ambiguity is always there because you don't really know what people are looking for. You know, you don't quite know what the exam board is looking for, you don't quite know what the universities are looking for, and they keep changing it and they don't really publish their criteria in the same way. And it's all of these things are things that you have to kind of get comfortable with. So that to me, that's the future of school leadership, is helping people become comfortable with those ideas. But I think the next thing is a sort of ever-increasing level of accountability. And I mean, isn't that the way of the world? You know, everybody's accountable for everything that they do. But in some ways, you can sort of see in many areas, not just in education, but in the world, that there's just a systematic passing of the buck down the chain to the lowest, the least able person to cope with it, you know. And I feel like that's something that I look at that and I go, well, is it now my responsibility to pass the buck down to somebody else? Or is there something that I can do that actually, you know, takes that responsibility and solves the problem? And that's an interesting challenge, not one that I really know the answer to right now. But I think it's a sort of systematic thing in all of business in Western culture, is that, you know, if I tell you something could happen, it's now your problem. And if I tell you, it's your problem. And if I tell you, it's your problem. And everybody's trying to shed risk, and it's being shed onto schools in some ways. And from time to time, you see schools trying to shed it off onto parents or onto pupils who are older and so on. And I'm concerned about that. I think it's unhealthy that nobody's really taking accountability for some of these things. And I want to try and get the balance right, you know, because I don't want to be the guy left holding the can either when the music stops. But at the same time, I kind of feel like you're there to do a job, and you've got to, you know, at some level, you've got to deliver something, and it can't just be, you know, I'm just the guy who looks at test scores and tells you there's a problem, and look at more test scores and I tell you there's a problem. What kind of interventions can you put in place to actually solve a problem rather than just pass it down the chain all the time?
Yeah, it's like if you take your car to a mechanic and then they can't fix it. It's like, that was your job. It's like you get it back. It's like, it doesn't work. Like, yeah, I know. That's why we brought it to you.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like if you get to that's like literally the job of a school is to educate children. And if that doesn't happen at the end, obviously, you know, there's a lot of, it's not just the school's responsibility. It's a lot of, it's a cooperation, but ultimately someone's got to be, I mean, the schools have to do their part.
And that's where that judgment call question comes in again. I think that you look at that and you go, well, we're going to do our part, but there are some parts that, you know, the child needs to do. There are some parts the family kind of needs to do. Like, you got to come to school, right? You can't be off school all the time, you know? So if your absence rate is like 25%, then, you know, that's a situation where I'm going to pass the buck because I'm not driving to your house and getting you out of bed and bringing you to school. It's like, you've got to at least get to the door, you know, and then I can take over and I can do some stuff there. But, you know, there's a balance to be struck there all the time, I think. And I suppose clear communication is something that I think is something I think I'm quite good at, and setting people's expectations correctly and helping them at an early stage to understand the world they're moving into, both in terms of moving into, say, independent school education, but also one thing I'm doing a lot more of is like helping families as their children grow up. Because, you know, you think that because you said this one time, people have remembered it, but you may have said it to people when their children were a bit too young for them to be bothered with that information. And what I feel like is an important thing is that more and more helping people navigate different steps in education is really important, particularly, I think, in one particular situation that I deal with, which is helping people make applications to college and university. Because one of the biggest factors in, not in success or failure at university, but applying or not applying for university, is whether you've got a sort of family background and culture in going to university. And for families that I deal with who don't have that background and culture, helping them to understand the world of university is something that I think that's a really important job, for example, and help giving them the right information and telling them how to think about it and really, you know, clearly advising them, you know. And that's one of those situations where you could say, well, oh, it's up to you to make your application, off you go and do it. But at the same time saying, like, well, let me come alongside you and help you understand what are your options here and what's the best strategy and all of these kind of things is I think that's just one example of the kind of thing that I'm talking about.
Yeah, our school motto used to be partnering with parents for a lifetime of achievement. And it is a partnership, and it's let me come along inside you and help. It's obviously everybody's getting involved. Everybody's working towards the success of the kid. Schools, it's not wise just to say, well, we did our job. You got your diploma. You're out. It's like for us being a K-5, it looks good to us. Like, we love when people, our graduates, are valedictorians of another school. Like, even though they've not been at our school for, you know, 7 years, like, but we had a hand in that, we'd like to think, and we're proud of them. And so, any major changes? I mean, I know you don't want to say like too much if you haven't, like, but like in the short term, any major changes ahead for you? You think you're going to do anything major within the next 12 months?
Probably not within the next 12 months. I think there's a risk when you have a leadership transition that you come in and you just rip everything up and people just are adrift. And I think a school is such a pipeline. I mean, you know this as well as I do, right? That there's a disrupting that pipeline is something that you don't do lightly. I mean, one thing I have done is that we've changed one of the courses we're going to offer next year. We're changing from the admin and IT course that I used to teach. We're now going to offer a course called business management. And there's good reasons for doing that, which are kind of slightly boring and technical, involving university admissions. But that's one change. And that was my first kind of taste of, well, I can just do this. And, you know, nobody's going to stop me doing this now. With the teacher involved, we decided just to do that. And that seems to be starting to come online now, so we're quite relaxed with that. I think one of the things that one of the expectations that's going to happen is like, people are going to look at me, I think, a little bit as, you know, you're the computer guy, you're going to have to you're going to modernize the school in some way. Like, you're going to have, I don't know, you know, card payments at the desk and all that kind of stuff. But I think what I'm seeing from parents more and more is they want near real-time information about their children. And we're not really set up to offer that. You know, we don't have a kind of homeschool portal that people can log into and see information and so on. It's more, we're still doing it from a kind of on a report card kind of cycle. So I think some of that stuff is there's a general demand for that. Like people maybe have been trained by us, I don't know, with things like our Instagram feeds and blasting out emails on MailChimp that you have a lot of visibility into what happens in the school, except where it comes to achievement and behavior and those kind of things where it's more challenging for us to kind of get that information out in a timely fashion. And I think that's something that it's certainly on my radar to think about that. But at the same time, I'm also concerned, like, if you systematize the collection of information about behavior and attainment, then that goes into a database and that never goes away, you know, and you start to create a data trail and, you know, you think about pupils in schools, you know, this pupil's got, you know, 10 incidents recorded against them and then you start putting metrics in place and it's like, well, if you get 10 of this and 4 of that, then this happens and that happens and you can become very data driven very quickly. And I think that's a concern for many head teachers and for many schools, that schools just become like a guy sitting in his office looking at a spreadsheet and counting up the number of red boxes, you know. And to a certain extent, we're already there with something like attendance, for example. I look at the attendance spreadsheet and I go, okay, who's above 10% here? And I've got to find these people and I'm going to look at them and I'm going to say, well, you know, letters have to go to these families straight away and so on and so on. And not having, I mean, at our scale, we can do it. We can have an understanding of, well, that person's at 10% because they live far away and they live on a farm and it snowed there and so on. Or this person has got a health problem that's contributing to that. Or this person's got a family problem that's contributing to that. And, you know, having that kind of knowledge at our scale is still possible. But for me and my personality, it's very easy to kind of get obsessed with, you know, staring into the numbers and hoping to see the matrix in some way. And that's something I think to guard against, but also to kind of embrace because there's a demand for it as well.
As you look ahead, what do you feel like is the strength of CDRS?
Well, I think that our biggest strength is also our biggest weakness, which is our size. And, you know, we're a 120 pupil school. And that gains us some things that other schools don't get, such as the ability to change course very quickly. And it gives me as a head teacher a very high level of visibility into, you know, even quite low levels of operations in the school. You know, there's the classroom teacher and there's me, and that's more or less it. So that's the kind of thing that that's powerful, but at the same time, with the small size comes a certain amount of economic precarity. I mean, the school's not in economic trouble in any sense at all, but you know, it wouldn't take that larger number of pupils to make it more difficult economically. Or, you know, if something changes and we can't offer that, then, you know, how does that affect recruitment, for example? I don't know. I don't know of anything in the current or immediate future where that would be true. But, you know, some people, they come to school and we say, look, here are all the subject options we can offer in school. And it's a good number, but it's not as many as a big high school of 2,000 pupils where they've got, you know, all kinds of different facilities that we don't have. So I think small size is something that it suits some people. It doesn't suit other people. And, you know, just I think I'm very keen to be honest with parents that come to see the school and I say, look, here's what we can do, here's what we can't do. And that is one situation where I'm saying, well, now over to you to make that decision. If this suits you, that's great. But don't come here thinking that we're going to offer you, you know, 20 subject options when we're actually going to offer you like 12 or something, you know. So that's both a strength and a weakness. But to me, our big strength, the one that keeps us going, is our technological prowess. And I don't just mean my technological prowess, but also the kind of high level of technical ability amongst our staff, their willingness to adopt new technology, and their willingness to leave behind old systems as well. Like, we just converted all of our school to using an electronic register, for example, and I had to show 3 teachers how to do that, and then the next day we did it and that was it. So things like that, I think, are some of our great strengths and weaknesses.
What do you think are, well, you know, come back to your weaknesses, you know, when you do talk about your small size, like, you don't have to have, let's say you had, say, 5 kids in a grade. not to come back mm-hmm. next year. Like, that's a high percent of your student body. Yeah. And but on the flip side, you don't have to, you know, if you're from an admission standpoint, you don't have to have that many new ones every year versus like a school of a private school of 2,000. Mm-hmm. Gosh, you've got to be on that admissions horn like crazy because you've got to get those new kids in. So it's like yeah. it's a good and bad.
Yeah, it is. You're absolutely right. You know, five down is a big bite out, and five up is a huge bonus, you know, and that's anywhere across the school. So it's interesting, though, what we're starting to notice is that we're not recruiting that many five-year-olds, but we are recruiting hugely in the middle of the school to get in for, you know, for secondary school. Basically, the secondary school is really in high demand. I think partly because our local high schools they're now like pupils of 2,000, and I think parents are quite intimidated by the scale of it compared to the primary schools their kids are going to. So they're often looking for something a little bit smaller. So the small size is a strength in recruitment as well.
What do you think are your opportunities going forward?
Well, I'm always struck by the fact that since in the sort of past sort of 6 or 8 months that I've been dealing with new parents, one of the most common things that people say to me is, oh, I wish I'd known this school was here 2 or 3 years ago. And to me, that tells me what the opportunity is that, you know, we're doing great. We've got, you know, we're nearly full, but there's a lot of people don't even know we're there. You know, because our building's not on a main road. It's not very obvious that it's a school. It doesn't look like a school. It just looks like a building in a sort of residential square. So I think that just getting more people to know about is a huge opportunity. If we just tell more people that we're here, I think we could, you know, significantly add to our numbers without too much difficulty. So to me, that's one of the great opportunities is just to get better known. I mean, we're kind of well known in a certain circle, but it's not necessarily the kind of circle that is going to send their children to the school. You know, we're quite well known in educational technology circles for the iPad stuff that we've done, but getting known in the local area as somewhere you might send your children is something that I think is a great opportunity for us to work on.
Last thing, what threats do you think going forward affect your school?
Well, independent schools are always concerned about things like demographics, you know, like how many 12-year-olds are there in Scotland that could potentially come to us, and what are the demographics of the local area as well? How far can we bring people from? We bring people from a lot further away than most schools do. Independent schools tend to do that, but we perhaps maybe more than our nearby independent schools as well. The other threat, I suppose, is for independent schools is always the kind of regulatory environment. How do the politicians and the charity regulators and so on see independent schools? Is it something that's seen as a positive? Is it something that's seen as a negative? I think in Scotland in particular, there's kind of a negative view of independent schools. I think that people see them as elitist. They see them as socially divisive. They see them as posh kids' schools. And the politicians, you know, they occasionally make changes that are to our benefit, and they sometimes make changes that are detrimental to us. And, you know, there's recently been a review of the way that school buildings are taxed in Scotland, and one of the things they decided to do there was to change the rules for independent schools, not for universities, not for nurseries, but for independent schools, K-12 schools only. We're going to get hit with an increase in business taxes, basically. So things like that are difficult things to deal with sometimes, but those things move in a relatively slow pace. You know, it's not something that you're going to come to school the next day and you're going to go, oh, they've just taken away our license to be a school. You know, that kind of thing doesn't happen. Nobody is that crazy, but just some of those things, you know, in some countries, independent education is very positively viewed. Scotland's not really that kind of country. I mean, I think independent schools are very popular with the parents that go to them, and plenty of people want to go to them that perhaps can't afford it. And that's another question as well. But we don't get the same kind of, it's not seen as an unalloyed good thing that there are independent schools in Scotland. And I think that does represent a bit of a threat.
Well, that's all I have kind of about, I guess, my questions for you as you do this promotion. Any final things you want to say before we wrap up?
Yeah, I just think it's been such an interesting thing to be given the appointment and have the appointment announced in December and not actually taking over formally until the summer. So I've got this kind of 6 month period where I'm just kind of taking over more and more parts of the job and learning about different areas. You know, I'm a secondary school teacher. Now I'm learning about how does a primary one learn how to do numbers and reading. What's our reading scheme in primary one? I've not really taken to do with that before. And now that's something that people are going to come to me and ask a question about. So it's just going to be a huge learning curve to get to know all the parts of the business rather than just, you know, being interested in my subject and the IT side of things and a few other bits and pieces. Now I've got to sort of work at such a high level and pull strings that you hope are connected to things and making sure that they are connected is part of that job as well. But, you know, putting in place a system but then relying on somebody else to actually execute it is something I've not really had to do very much in my career before. If I put in place a system, I'm the guy who's got to execute it as well. And taking those two things apart, I think, is going to be a very interesting challenge, both to my ability to sort of execute that properly, to execute the supervision role rather than the execution role, and then also to kind of come up with the systems and then live in that world. And do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not used to living with the concern that something might not have been done, because if something was my job to get done, I would have done it and I would have put in place a self-management system of some kind to make sure that did happen. Whereas now it's much more kind of, okay, I asked for something to be done. Well, how long do I give it till I check to see if it is done? You know, I can't obviously check, you know, the next minute. Did you do that yet? Got to trust people to get it done in the appropriate amount of time. But how much is too much again? How much is micromanaging? How much is, you know, too hands off? That's something that I'm going to have to get to learn. And these are all the great opportunities. I think it's really exciting, to be honest with you. It's not something that I'm not saying I don't have any sense of trepidation, but I'm not terrified about it anymore. You know, if you were to have this conversation with me back at, you know, in December, the day after I was appointed, I was terrified that day. I was looking at it going, I don't know what I'm doing here. But what's been very helpful is to have this period of time to just take some time out and just say, look, I need to know about this, I need to know about that. There are some projects I need to do. Starting to delegate more and realizing that people are actually quite keen to be delegated to as well. That's the thing that I have to get into my head, is it's not an imposition on people to ask them to do something. Like, they want to be useful, and giving them the opportunity to do so is really important too.
Well, I think I've told you privately, but publicly, I want to say congratulations on the promotion.
Thank you.
Well deserved, and I know you'll do great. And you know, it's just, that's a tough job because you're entrusted, the education of a lot of kids is in your hands, mm-hmm. ultimately. And so it's not a job that anyone should take lightly. It's not an easy job. And, but I know you'll do great and the school will be better off for it.
That's very kind. Thank you.
So we'll wrap up there for this week. We have one more episode before we call today here at Out of School Headquarters. And the next episode we have, which will be in 2 weeks, will be about what we think the future of EdTech looks like over the next 5 to 10 years. So thanks for everybody for listening today. I would say tell your friends, but tell your friends for the last episode. But
the back catalog is still good.
The back catalog is still good. So again, thanks for listening. And our website is outofschool.net, and I'm at Bradley Chambers on Twitter and chambersdaily.com on the web.
And I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter, spears.org on the web.
Have a good week, everybody.